This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Big show coming up. And by the way, thanks to Cherish. Dave handed me a few bottles of 12 bottles of it today.
Yes, they did.
It was excited. Delicious. We showed up at the same time. He had a nice little case of Cherish in his arms. I was like, they came through.
You were very subtle about it yesterday when you opened the show by saying, anytime you want to send me some of those. I'm like, all right, I'll bring my buddy. A box of Cherish.
I thank them. I thank you. It's good stuff. So we appreciate that. Meanwhile, coming up today at 4 o'clock, John Clayton will be with us as he is every day. And then we're going to talk some Cougar basketball with CJ Ellaby, who leads the team in every category except.
Except what?
Assists.
Oh,
I thought you would know that off the. I mean, he's points, he's rebounds.
I don't know that off
steals,
the top of my head, but I'm as excited as I've been for an interview in a long time on this show.
I know you are.
CJ Ellaby has made Cougar basketball relevant again. We're playing the Huskies 3 o'clock on Sunday. You can listen to the game right here on 710 ESPN Seattle or watch it on ESPNU, and I'm fired up for it. I love our new coach. And
you don't go to any of the games,
We're playing defense, and no, I don't go to any games.
By the way, is there a point? Favorite?
I'm trying
to put it the right way.
I don't know. I don't know yet, but I would guess it'd be probably around a pick'em. I don't know. The Huskies.
It would have to be the Cougs, right?
Well, no, but everybody keeps waiting for the Huskies to come around, They're more talented, so we'll see. But I would suspect it'll be a pick'em. But it was a fun conversation we had with CJ Ellaby, and I was excited about it.
Yeah, so that's coming up today at 4:30, so stay tuned for that.
By the way, he'll ask a question.
Yeah.
And it's very rare that you get somebody, an athlete, that will ask a question. Wade LeBlanc is one.
Did he ask questions?
Well, I remember one time I was waiting for Jim, I think, and he got there early to interview him. And he started asking me about my career and travel and all that stuff.
That's pretty cool.
And so CJ Ellaby, there's a tease for you. But I won't tell you what he asked.
Yeah, see, I was going to say, that's where you stop. Right
the now. Only reason, Bob, is because I don't remember.
I kind of vaguely do.
Otherwise, you would spit it out there, huh?
Yes.
That's good. I'm glad the memory's failing you there. Meanwhile, people are already texting in, hey, we can see Dave's face today. If you want to tune into the video stream, 710sports.com, you can click the watch live button, our new camera set up in here.
Yeah, here. Okay.
As you can see, Dave's a very big fan of the new video system.
Let's see the camera follow me on that.
We're on a bit of a delay, but it'll show up. It'll show up. Jeez. Jim loves if you push the envelope. He likes to feel like I'm not the only one who's going to get in trouble.
You look like you're enjoying it on TV, though, when you're sitting there with Aaron Levine. You got that TV smile going.
It's TV, Jim.
Okay.
This is radio.
All right.
This is where he's supposed to be able to relax. All right. Meanwhile, we'll get into the conversation later. We've been breaking down free agents every day. Every day we've been taking a look at. We identified the top 10 Seahawk free agents, and we ranked them in order. And we started with number 10, which was Luke Wilson. And then we had a conversation yesterday about Al Woods, who was number 9. We'll unveil number 8 today. And we're just kind of coming to a conclusion whether they stay or whether they go. And it's not personal. We have to make that clear.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Luke is arguably the hardest one we're going to do out of any of these. He was the first one. We all couldn't love the guy more, but I think we came to the conclusion, based on who he is, what he produces, money, blah, 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 he's probably gone. So we'll do that again today, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, a couple of topics out there that people have been hammering on, and that is Jadeveon Clowney worth. What is he worth? Some saying Khalil Mack money. Greg Rosenthal told Clayton that even if Clowney isn't quite on that level in terms of the player, he's probably going to get that kind of money because players of his caliber just don't make it to free agency that often. Is that something you buy into?
He's
just a big name, so he automatically gets it?
Well, a player of his caliber usually gets franchised, so you don't see him on the open market. I think that's probably what the point is that he's making there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they made the deal to bring him over here and said, we will not franchise you.
Right.
So that's not an option for him. But different takes on this. Brady Henderson of ESPN.com talking about this. He was on with Danny and Gallant and talking about, well, if he's going to cost you that kind of money, maybe you spread that money out amongst other pass rushers.
He's going to get the free agency, and as we all know, when guys get there, the price has the potential to skyrocket when every team can bid on him. And, you know, I think even though he's coming off a season where he only had 2 sacks, he's still got a ton of pressure. He's still a marquee name. And I think that, you know, if he commands, you know, something in the neighborhood of, you know, what Khalil Mack got a couple years ago, then if you're the Seahawks, you have to say, okay, yeah, we need this guy, but we also need more, because you saw that their pass rush was pretty ineffective with him. And so if it's just him, that's not going to be enough. And if he, you know, gets that top of the market deal, are you going to have enough to get somebody else?
And that's what I had been saying before when we were talking about it, that you want him back. You want that pressure. You want that disruptor. You want what he brought to the table. You definitely want him back. But you can't look at that and say, hey, they brought him back, we're all set, because you just had him for a year and you were a terrible defense in the way of pass rush. So whether you bring him back or not, you still have a lot you need to add to this team, right? Specifically that defensive front.
And I think, you know, to me, I don't think it's – I can see my way clear to him signing here, but not necessarily needing to get Khalil Mack money. And maybe I'm being overly optimistic. Clayton and I talked about this morning when I remembered to
call
answer the phone when they called.
I'm sure they appreciated that.
But, and it's not like he's getting on in his years, but this is going to be his 7th year coming up here. And look, the average in the NFL is 3.5. So to me, first of all, you know, he wants to be on a winning team. And then the other thing is, and maybe this is taking a step that is a little bit drastic. I asked a few people around the league just to get back to me, and I haven't heard back. But do you think that he's a 3-4 type of, and I know we say this a lot, you know, 3-4 versus 4-3, but really, in a 3-4, you're going to rush 4 guys. So one of those guys is going to be a rush. He may be counted as a linebacker because, you know, it's 3 linemen, 4 linebackers. And I'm sure that he's going to rush, but is he that effective in that? And is he rushing every time? Because a lot of the thing is, you know, you put, and that's how the Steelers get so many sacks. They do a lot of like stemming, and it's like you don't know who's going to rush the quarterback, who's going to
drop.
What
does that mean, stemming?
You know, where a guy's like shifting up on the line and then he's bailing out, or a guy's, you know, off the ball and then he comes and rushes when the ball snaps. So
are they a 4-3?
No, they're a 3-4.
3-4, okay.
Yeah. So, and I went through the league and looked at it, and John, you know, kind of agreed with this, that it's probably, now I'll see, you know, we'll see how much it is. Like, is it that drastic that he really wants to be in a 4-3 versus a 3-4? Because I just think he's more effective just down on in a 3-point stance, rushing the passer and not necessarily dropping into coverage ever, unless they run some kind of a zone blitz.
And that's, and just to dumb this down a bit for people that don't know the distinction between what he would do in a 3-4 versus a 4-3.
Yeah.
In a 3-4, he's being asked to drop into coverage much more than a 4-3.
Yeah, because you're gonna bring 4. I mean, every once in a while you see people will send 3, but I mean, to get a effective pass rush, you want to be able to send 4, and then, you know, you've got guys coming from different areas. I think that's how the Steelers get a lot of their sacks. There's just a lot of confusion. I mean, Russell got sacked 3 times in the first quarter against the Pittsburgh Steelers, which, that's one of the things, by the way, that made that his best game ever. Because remember, did a little stat study on that with that many attempts, I think he was 84%. And he threw 2 touchdowns or 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. And he was ended up whittling it down to, like, he's one of like 2 or 3 guys in NFL history to have those numbers against that. But anyway, that's another thing. So I went through and looked. The league is exactly half 3-4.
Okay.
So, and I'm looking at, okay, if he does want to land on a 4-3 team, you can kind of whittle it down based on, I mentioned earlier, he's getting on in his years, but I mean, he wants to be on a winner, right?
Is he only 26?
Is he?
I think so.
He'll be 27 on Valentine's Day.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but it's his 7th year he's going into. So, I mean, he started very young, but still, I mean, your clock is ticking. You want to get on a winner. And I'm looking at some of these 4-3 teams. Does he want to go to Detroit?
No.
No one wants to go there.
Yeah, I don't think
not
so
as
either.
Long as that coach is there.
Yeah, and then I'm just going by conference. Look at
sloppy coach.
Minnesota runs 4-3, but they've got a great pass rush there.
Yeah, how many of these teams have the salary cap space and the need for somebody like this?
That's NFC North. AFC North, you look at the 2-4-3 teams, Cleveland and Cincinnati.
I
want to go there?
No.
The one I thought was tricky in AFC East, Buffalo, is the one 4-3. They're a playoff team, but that's up there. You want to play in the cold. Jadeveon Clowney's from South Carolina, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering if maybe I shouldn't have scratched that one off the list. And then you look at the NFC East, the 2-4-3 teams are Philly and Dallas. So, those are contending teams, good places.
I assume he wouldn't be going to Philadelphia, though. Or maybe money would talk, but...
Yeah, that fan base is a little mad at him right now.
Yeah, they don't like him there.
Would they forgive him?
That's right, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I don't think he was a fan of their fans either. So maybe that wouldn't be a good marriage. The Cleveland teams, obviously Cleveland and Cincinnati, Ohio teams. If we're going to hold him to his word that he wants to play for a winner, then those teams are eliminated.
Okay, but as
he
said...
He does want to play for the Dolphins. He nixed that before he came to Seattle.
Right.
As he said, he wants to play in a 4-3, or are we just assuming that he'd be better off in a 4-3, or maybe just hoping that he would want to play
casting
in a 4-3.
Wild assumptions.
That's my assumption, and like I said, Clayton, I think, at least he thought that too, and so, take it for what it's worth. Maybe it's not. I mean, you throw enough money at him, and I'll stand up every once in a while. Yeah, but, and you look at in the AFC West, Oakland, San Diego, Kansas City. I mean, Oakland, San Diego, I don't know if they're going places or not. San Diego going into the season was supposed to be a sleeper pick, and then they had a bunch of injuries. KC doesn't need a pass rush. The only in our division, San Francisco is the only other one that runs our division. They run a 4-3. They don't need D linemen.
Yeah, and I don't know how many of these teams have the salary cap space again. That's a big ticket item. So even if we look at teams, say, well, they run a 4-3 and they're a playoff team.
Right.
All right. Well, what is their need, and how much cap space do they have?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you really whittled down the number of legit teams. Again, if he sticks to his word that he wants to play for a winner, and it's not just about the paycheck, then I think that you can really narrow it down to a handful of teams because they don't have the cap space. B, they don't truly have the need, or C, they're not winners.
Yeah. So I mean, I kind of whittled it down to Philly, Dallas, I don't think Minnesota needs anybody. New Orleans runs a 4-3. I don't think he wants to go to Atlanta. They're kind of in a – maybe he does. Maybe that's one. So I'll throw that at one in there. Like Jacksonville runs a 4-3. Does he want to go there? I mean, they're having a hard time bringing people in. They're playing games in London.
He might want to be part of Minshew Mania, though.
Oh, that's right.
Who doesn't want to be part of that?
What do they talk about down there? Duval? I don't even know what that means. It's like their war cry down there.
I've seen that too, and I don't know what it means.
Yeah. But I think you kind of whittle it down. If you're going to go with a 4-3 team and a team that has, some ability to get, it looks like they're on the come, that they're doing a good job, like New Orleans. Yeah, you might want to go there. But I think, it's not like he's going to go out there and there's going to be 31 teams,
all bidding for his services.
Is he going to want to, even include any of those guys as far as taking a trip or whatever?
Ian Rappaport was on the Seahawks podcast with Talking Seahawks podcast with our buddy Joe Fan. Had a couple of thoughts on Clowney. Here's one where he's just talking about Clowney thinking he'd stay with the Seahawks if the offer were for the same amount as some of these other offers.
He liked Seattle, and then as he got on there, I think he really, really liked it. To me, if the money's the same, my guess is he picked Seattle just because he really appreciated and liked his time there. I don't know if the money is going to be the same. They aren't generally a team that goes nuts in free agency, but this is not really a free agent. It's kind of one of their own guys, So it's my guess is they're going to make a hard push, and I think he's going to be interested, but we'll see.
And then one more.
Free agency.
Yeah. Puberty's rough for a lot of people, man. It happens. he talked about Clowney, as much as we all rule out all these other teams because they're not winners, and he made the statement he wanted to play for a winner. He thinks Clowney will still use offers from those teams as leverage.
Guys talk about that all the time.
That team will be used as leverage would probably be my guess. He wants to go to a good team. The problem is, there's a lot of teams that are bad, but then some of those teams turn out to be good. I mean, one of them is in the Super Bowl, right? The 49ers were bad. Good organization, but they were bad. And now they're good. And I think that's kind of the problem is You know, because if you're a team that's probably not good enough and you're going to spend money to sign Clowney, you're probably going to spend money to sign others, you could turn yourself into a good team. That's probably going to be his selling point, right? It's going to be, you know, you come join us and you help us help make us good.
I'll say this for every San Francisco, there's a Cleveland.
That means bad?
That never gets better.
Yeah, I mean, going into that season, and I guess it's more obvious now. Yeah, you kind of saw that coming with San Francisco, but I don't think anybody thought they were going to go from 4-12
to the Super Bowl.
And everybody thought Cleveland was going to be that kind of team. And
not everybody, Dave. We didn't.
Well, it's because of their donkey of a quarterback. Oh, did you hear all the reflections he was having? As yeah, maybe I should keep my mouth shut.
Yeah,
and I wanted to go, you're talking right now.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, how about start right now?
He put his foot in his mouth a few times.
Man.
Yeah. One more from Brady Henderson in terms of just the amount of money you potentially will spend on Jadeveon Clowney. Could that be better used on two players? And he cites an example.
I just think that you know, if it's going to be in that Frank Clark, you know, territory, that DeMarcus Lawrence territory, are you better off just spending that money on two guys and spending maybe a little bit more on two guys like the Green Bay Packers did last year? Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, both, you know, in terms of average, right around $30 million combined for the two of those guys, and they got a combined 25 and a half sacks in the regular season. By the way, four more in the playoffs of Russell Wilson. Preston Smith had that killer sack on third down that really, you know, helped put the game away for Green Bay.
You know, I have to say I appreciate Brady sort of looking at this from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can make the case, definitely, and I don't think he's just doing it just to throw it out there.
Well, they have to be making the case, right? They have to be going, okay, we can offer him X amount of dollars. If he says no, what's our plan B? Well, then that sounds like a good plan B if you can identify two really productive players. Like, okay, we can get these two for the price of one, but he listed a prime example. That's great, but they don't always work out to be like the Smith brothers, right?
Right. Yeah, or like a Shaquille Barrett. I mean, that guy kind of came out of nowhere, right? I mean, he led the league, I believe, this year.
19 and a half sacks.
Yeah.
He had.
So, I mean, yeah, you can hit on a guy like that, but it just really I don't know. You know, it's funny. We going into Green Bay, was on the fourth bus, which was, you know, GM, everybody like that, me, Rabel. And when we had to get to the press box, we had to go through the locker room, which was really weird. And
you hate going in the locker room.
No, I don't like going in there. So, but yeah, it was just kind of windy going through all these different little places. And he was one of the guys that was like, yeah, the VIP bus is here, I see. And I mean, he's getting ready to go out on the field and play in a playoff game. And he was laughing and joking around. And I guess, you know, look, it's just a feeling I get that I think he had a bad experience in Houston. He didn't like it there, and he's in a good place. So I just think, and I'm not trying to give his money away, but, man, I think with Dwayne Brown here, and Dwayne was selling him on it, you know, even earlier when he was, you know, when he was still with the Texans. So, by the way, Shaquille Barrett, 19 and a half sacks, as you mentioned, Jim. The previous year, 3. Before that, 4. 1.5, 5.5. 5.5 sacks is the most he's had in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get lucky on some level.
Right.
I mean, it's they didn't sign him thinking, this guy's going to get us almost 20 sacks.
Right.
There's no way. I don't care what they say. They didn't think that. And sometimes you hit on the right guys. The Seahawks did it once with Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. Now, it didn't add up to, you know, 20 sacks apiece, but you're talking about two difference makers, two impact players that you got at reasonable NFL dollars.
Well, I know. Wouldn't you rather go out and find this year's version of Bennett and Averill?
Well, that's hard to do is my point. It doesn't happen that often.
No, I know, but there's a lot of defensive ends that are out there that are available in free agency. And I appreciate Brady bringing that up too, because I think most of us are looking at, man, where would that Seahawks defense be without Clowney? Well, they weren't very good with Clowney. When you look at it, I'm just looking at the stats right now, 26. We saw all 16 games or all 18 games. They just weren't very good defensively, and he was part of it. He only missed two games, and they lost to Arizona. One of the games he didn't play, and they won at Philadelphia. And without him, they had 3 or 4 sacks at Philadelphia. So, I like Clowney, and I think it'd be great to have him back. But, boy, I don't think you break the bank for him. No, not a guy that – I mean, you might be better off finding two guys that can give you 9 sacks next year. 9 sacks each, rather than bringing Clowney back and getting another 3.
Sacks sure were important this year, though.
Yeah,
they didn't have many of them, but, man, the results were we're good. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I guess you don't want to go too crazy. And also, just don't forget, some guys get better. Maybe it comes from a guy that's already here.
Let's take two.
Take two. Jimmy Lake spoke about UW's quarterback competition following signing day, saying that they have three young guys in Jacob Sermon, Dylan Morris, and Ethan Garbers, and whoever learns and leads this offense will get the opportunity to start in the fall.
You think he's really, really upset he didn't get KJ Costello?
Probably.
Does there?
Yeah, because I mean, everything you hear and everything you see about, well, you know, we haven't seen these guys in action: Sermon, Morris, and Garbers. Garbers being a true freshman, so yeah, KJ Costello. We saw him a couple years ago. How good he was when he wasn't hurt. Last year he had injuries, so he went to Mississippi State instead of Washington. So it's going to be.
Does it tell you he doesn't have the confidence that one of these guys is the guy? The fact that they had interest in Costello.
Well, I think Peterson would have said the same thing. It'd be an open competition. Remember last year he didn't give the job right away to Eason.
What do you think that says to and Jacob Sermon, the kid from Bothell, played for the Blue Wave out there. But you know, you're sitting there and your coach is going after this guy Costello, and I don't know how much recruiting or anything that they can do about that, but if you kind of knew that we didn't get him, so I'm sort of the second or third choice here.
I'm the consolation prize. Yeah, you know what exactly. It does, Dave? It provides that chip on the shoulder.
Chip on the shoulder, yeah, there you go.
Mariners GM Jerry Dipoto said at the team's pre-spring training luncheon that Mitch Haniger would probably have core surgery and miss 6 to 8 weeks, but that appears to have changed now. As he said, we have no expectations on his timeline until we actually see him at spring training.
Man, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't make me feel good.
This is all because he took one right in the onions.
In the seeds, yeah.
Right. Oh, man. I mean, this was a serious deal. He is a tough dude. I mean, you know.
Imagine what he's been going through with the rehab and everything else?
Right. So, how do you rehab that
I don't,
area
I
of your body?
I was just going to ask that. I'm not sure what exercises you do. A lot of stretching, perhaps. I don't know.
Probably just sit a lot and don't do anything.
A lot of ice.
I vote that we stop talking about it.
Yeah, we're all cringing here. We're all starting to curl into a ball. But, yeah, that's I don't even know what to say about it. It's a bummer, to say the very least. I guess the only silver lining, and this is not great, is he's not the difference between this team going to the postseason or not. It's not a postseason year. This is about the youth. That's this is about true. Watching the young guys. So it's not. I'm just bummed I won't be able to see him play, at least initially. Hopefully he's going to get out there at some point. But I don't look at this as, well, now what are they going to do?
Yeah. Well, at one point, he was one of those untouchable players.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the closer, Edwin Diaz. It was him. And who's?
Marco.
And Marco.
Yeah.
Right.
And I believe he's touchable now, but nobody wants to touch him.
Right.
At least until he gets healthy.
I don't think he wants anybody touching him.
You're probably also, that's probably more accurate.
To me, I guess I've kind of, I don't want to say counted him out, because he's a great player and a great kid and everything, but the excitement for this season is the young guys.
Yeah.
And the guys that they've been talking about in their farm system for the last year or two.
All right, there you go. Coming up, do you want to see Marquise Blair opposite Quandre Diggs next season? And if so, that's how you feel about it. Where does that leave Bradley McDougald? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program, as he does every day here with Bob, Dave, and more. We'll also talk some XFL. How about that? The season kicks off Saturday in earnest. You guys going to watch? Are you excited?
I'm going.
11 o'clock on Saturday.
Oh, wait. No,
I think ABC.
Yeah, you're not. It's out of town.
It's out of town. It's in Washington, D.C. I'm going to fly all the way out there.
You're not that excited.
No. But I'm going to be excited when they come here on the 15th.
Yeah, that's the home opener, and we'll get into some of that. We've got our XFL insider, Moore Dooley. We'll have her expand on this, and we'll get into that conversation. Meanwhile, we ask the question, do you want to see Marquise Blair opposite Quandre Diggs next season? And if you do, if you're one of those people who says it's time, get him out there. You drafted him for a reason. He's showed promise. Where does that leave Bradley McDougald? Because Brady Henderson, again, our buddy from ESPN.com, wrote, with a year under his belt, Blair will be a favorite to start alongside Diggs in 2020. That makes Bradley McDougald a potential salary cap casualty. McDougal finished the season strong, playing perhaps his best game in the wild card round and wasn't on the injury report after week 9, but working against him is his combination of age, 29 years old, which is amazing. We look at that and go, he's kind of old.
Yeah.
29. Diminished speed and a $5.43 million cap number in the final year of his contract. Steep for a backup. Seattle would save $4.1 million against the cap by releasing McDougal.
Mm. They have some three safety defenses that they run. So, I mean, it wouldn't be a total waste. How'd everybody feel about his – I expected him to maybe improve a little bit more. I don't think he had a bad season.
You're talking McDougal?
About Bradley McDougal.
See, I just take
like he got off to a slow start.
Yeah, I take it from you, Dave, because 2 years ago, I think you were talking about him having a great season, or at least a really good season, and then it seemed like he took a little bit of a step back this year.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, he had three forced fumbles his first full year of starting, and that first year he didn't really have any stats because he was running down on kickoffs, and you know he was behind Cam
and Earl was still
there. Earl, yeah. So, you know, that's what that was about. But then, yeah, last year in 2018, three forced fumbles, a fumble recovery, three interceptions. Didn't he have like two in the? In the first, or he had one in that first game against Denver, and then he could have had another one.
Yeah,
that he dropped, and then this year, you know, one forced fumble, one fumble recovery, two interceptions. I mean, he was still good, but there was some times where he was great, like his interception in Philadelphia. You know, I think he was covering Zach Ertz on that play, and then, you know, I didn't see as many like big hits. The biggest hits that you saw really came from Quandre Diggs, and then and also Blair when he was out there. So. Yeah, but I think you keep him on this team. I don't think $5 million is a lot to pay. I think safeties are really important. We saw that this year.
We saw with the Lano Hill Tedrick Thompson duo, that was a combination of bad. I mean,
you don't want to see either one of those.
No,
guys
I don't
out there anymore.
I don't. And you saw
it's too bad. I mean, they're grooming those guys, and you expected them to step in there, and especially their draft status. Or maybe Thompson was a fifth rounder, but. Yeah, that was a disappointment. But, Dave, do you think Blair has done enough to show that he's ready to start?
Well, probably not. I mean, look, he's a rookie. And, again, I always go to the second year, how much more comfortable you get. And, obviously, and again, it was about trust last year. I would have sacrificed a little bit of trust and thought, I think he has better instincts than Lano Hill or Tedrick Thompson. And, you know,
seemed like it.
We saw those guys take some really bad angles this year. I mean, remember the 80-yard run from Kenyon Drake? That was Lano Hill. And then was there something?
Tedrick got one over his head. Tedrick, and it was,
yeah, the one against Cincinnati. I think there was one against either New Orleans or Baltimore as well. And I'm just like, man, I mean, it's really a strong sense that you have to have of taking an angle because you're so far away from the ball. If you start off taking a bad step, you know, and that's the thing, it's just kind of an instinct thing.
It's like an outfielder reading a fly ball. You step in and all of a sudden you realize, uh-oh,
yeah.
It's over my head. That first step is crucial.
Somebody made that, maybe it was Graz that made this. It's like a throw from the outfield, actually, what I think is a good analogy. I mean, if you're off just a hair, when you throw it, when it goes, you know, 40, 50 yards.
By the time it gets there.
Yeah, it's going to be off by, you know, 10, 12 feet. So that's the thing with the angles. And I see Diggs is great at it.
Mm-hmm.
Great at it, at taking those angles. And the good ones are Eugene Robinson, Paul Moyer. I mean, you know, that's just smarts and instinct and looking at film and just realizing. And I just didn't think that Tedrick or Lano had those instincts, and I really think Blair does.
Pete was and we always talk and joke about Pete is so reluctant to be negative, or he never criticizes anybody, and if he does, you really have to listen for it. He kind of did with Blair. Remember there was that game Blair started, it was here at home, and I was down there in that post-game press conference, and somebody had said, hey, what did you think of Blair's game? I think he had a big hit or something in there. And he goes, yeah, that, you know, highlighted that play. Hey, you missed some things out there. You got through it. You know, it was less than glowing.
Yeah, it seemed like he didn't fit right or didn't know the concept.
Yeah, he missed on a couple of things. Or, yeah, it was about as critical as Pete gets, but
I
it was surprising.
I might have that if you want to hear it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
He got through the game. We stayed on top throughout the game. You know, we didn't give up any bombs and deep balls that these guys are famous for. And so that was a good part of the plan. And he contributed to that. You saw the one deep ball down the middle that they threw all the way to the back out of the end zone. They defended well. So he's coming. There's a lot of new stuff. There's a lot of new stuff for him. And because of you know, how we wanted to play in this game plan, and Bradley coming back and had been playing strong safety, you know, that it was the natural that he would go back there, that Keith would go back to free safety. And so we'll see. You know, there's competition.
Okay. He got through it. I think there might have been a different game, too, that he'd said something about him missing on plays, or I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember his exact wording, but it was he missed a couple of things.
I remember that, too.
Yeah, and I don't remember which game it was, but he just – for whatever reason, where he's usually the guy that, hey, you know what, young guy out there competing, he's competing like crazy, man. And yeah, you know, he'll learn. It was more for Pete. It was critical.
Well, and there's nobody that knows safety play better than Pete Carroll. Pete's the best. I mean, he's an old safety coach, and that's his position. And you know, I think that was the strength of that defense, why we were so good there for a while with the Legion of Boom, is those two safeties.
How much do you think, I mean, I think we forget that he had, was it an ACL over the offseason, McDougal? He had a knee injury.
He did. I don't think it was a full tear, though, but there was some.
Yeah, that's right. It was his patellar tendon, and it was like partially, there was a tear in there
Wondering if that's, you know, impacted who he was at the beginning versus what we saw at the end, because I think we all agreed he looked more effective. He looked more like himself at the end.
At the end, yeah.
Well, part of it had to do with Quandre Diggs, too. A listener texted in and reminded us of that, too. You remember that when Diggs got here, and then I remember seeing McDougal, some of his quotes saying how much more comfortable he felt there. So probably covering for Tedrick Thompson or Lano Hill or whoever else was out there. So I'm with you, though, Dave. I just think McDougal's too valuable still. That doesn't seem like that steep of a price to pay for him, $4 or $5 million.
Well, and they can always restructure.
I still want him on the roster, and I don't feel like 29's too old. And has he lost a step? Maybe a little bit. I don't know. But I still look at him as being a valuable part of that secondary.
Yeah, and I thought maybe some of the worst things that happened this year. First of all, I want to say about Pete is that he usually doesn't say anything after a game. He usually is like, I got to look at the film first. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think it's rare for him to. And then, like Danny always parses Pete, you know, he got through it. He played a lot of football. Those are the kind of negative comments. So. Yeah, but just the communication out there, I think, was the biggest thing. The 710sports.com, you can find the football 101, 710sports.com. The thing that I talked about was how the DBs lined up. They layered. So it's like one guy gets up on the line of scrimmage. One guy's about 3 yards back. The other guy's about 5 yards back. And you saw the Seahawks struggled with that this year, and especially in the Green Bay game where they ran that kind of rub route there where Jimmy Graham got open twice on that same play. And then there was a touchdown out there because those guys weren't communicating. And the play, one of the plays that I diagrammed, the DBs for Kansas City, you can see them looking at each other, pointing and talking. And you didn't see a lot of that in the backfield. And I think that's where probably why Pete didn't have Blair out there, that, you know, he just wasn't getting the kind of communication that you need.
Well, I'm with you, Jim, and I think you're on the same page. I don't want to see McDougal go anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think at worst, maybe they could restructure it if they felt like that was too punitive. You know, making, what did I say, $5.43 million, they could figure out a way to spread that out. But
it's just part of it with the big hits that you see from Blair and then being a second rounder. You feel like you want to fast forward him into the lineup.
We'll see what they do, but I don't want to see McDougal go. That was just too problematic last year with Hill and Thompson and all of that. Meanwhile, the XFL season kicks off on Saturday with the Seattle Dragons taking on the DC Defenders. We're going to take a closer look at what to expect in the debut weekend. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, the professor, John Clayton, will be joining us on the program. What are you looking so amused for?
I was trying to think who that band was.
It's the band you always say.
Kings of Leon.
Yeah. That's who it is.
Oh, at least you get the name right.
Good job.
Kings of Lions.
We got to get some of my playlists for a while.
You know, we need is some of my playlists going into these. What do you call them, bumpers?
I'm still waiting on the email from you, Jim.
All right, it's coming.
Okay, well, hey, I want
got a little
songs
grassroots
too.
For you. You guys ready some for some grassroots?
Too? Anybody can send me emails right. and get some bumpers.
It's going to be a battle.
Bob doesn't want grassroots.
I don't know who does, but we'll.
I do.
Yeah. Okay.
Dave might.
Before we get started, this team, Mora, this is the all-name team, the Seattle Dragons. Listen to this. They have a Niles, one of my favorite characters. Niles Crane, from Frasier. Niles, Cyril, Venzel, Quintarius, a Stansley, a Praise. You ever seen that? P-R-A-I-S-E.
Oh, you're Praise. Saying it's they have a Praise. His name's not a Praise.
No, it's Praise.
Okay.
Godwin, Santos, which is killer. I love that.
These name. Are all first names.
Sergio and Kaysen, of course. Kaysen
seems
guy.
Like the most normal name out of that whole bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see
Stansley.
These You're going over to the...
They also just added a kicker named Ernesto.
Ernesto.
Nice.
I like it. We automatically just put the inflection on it. It's great. The season starts this weekend. Dragons taking on the DC Defenders. Now, when the XFL first started, it was being announced, and we were talking about it. It's like right in the heart of the football season, and I remember going, yeah, I'm not that into it. I'm not. Maybe when the time comes, I'll be excited, but you know, it was Seahawks time. But this feels like a very welcome reprieve. This feels like a very welcome thing because, we don't have hockey. We don't have the NBA. Otherwise, we'd be talking NBA trade deadline and what does this mean to the Seattle team and all these moves. We don't have any of that. So now you've got the continuation of football, and we'll see what level of football it is or how different it looks. There are a lot of different rules that we talked about, but I've become decidedly more excited for this than I was.
Yeah. I agree. And look at some of these things, and Maura, reminded us of some of the different things. The one thing I think is kind of hokey is the double forward pass. Multiple forward passes will be allowed behind the line of scrimmage to create more play options for offenses. I'm not so sure how much.
Well, it'll be close to a lateral anyway.
Yeah. So, I'm not so sure about that one, but what about the point after touchdown?
I love that.
The tiered point system.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can...
3, 2, and 1, right?
Right. Yeah, you could have a 9-point touchdown. So 2 points from the 5-yard line, 1 point from the 2-yard line, no kicks, and then the 10-yard line is 3.
And Coach Moore said he would go for it every single time.
Every single time you go for the 3 from the 10-yard line, don't you?
Because if you get 1 of 3, you've got... As good as
I think it's a no-brainer. If I were coaching, that's what I'd be doing.
10-yard play, yeah. That strategy will be interesting. So I'm just hoping that also that some of the some of the blocks and the I know I sound terrible saying this, but I really don't care about player safety. Once you decide to play football,
I think all the listeners were aware of that already.
Yeah, that's been made clear. Make football violent again? Was that what your
That's the
your
number
slogan?
One thing you wanted from the XFL, wasn't
it? Yeah, and I think what we heard from Ryan Gustafson is that it's going to be more traditional, I think is the word that he was using. But I'm just hoping that they don't make a bunch of tic-tacky little calls. And so, are you sitting there going, yeah, we need to have more penalties so we can protect ourselves? It's a violent game. It's just the way it is. So.
Dave, I have something else you're going to like.
Okay.
You always say you like rooting for the small guys.
Yes.
I actually messed this up last night because when they first drafted them, they took Trey Williams and Kenneth Farrow as their running backs, 3 picks apart, and they had been the starters for offensive coordinator Mike Riley in the AAF. So I thought they were going to be the first two, but now that the depth chart is out, Jaquan Gardner is listed as the number one running back, and he is 5'5".
No way.
I've been seeing him in practice. He's really shifty. He's fun to watch.
Yeah. He disappears behind the line. He's going to be hard to see. They'll lose track of him.
Jaquan Gardner, is that what you said?
Yeah.
He's from Humboldt State. That's my dad's alma mater.
Are they the artichokes?
They're the lumberjacks.
Oh, yes, he is.
He's a lumberjack, man.
Well, there you go. You have a new favorite.
Yeah. Awesome.
So, Maura, what do you think the quality? You'll be there. You'll be there for the first game. What do you think the quality of play will be like?
I think it's going to be pretty fast paced, which I think will lead to some of that hard hitting football that Wyman is hoping for. But I just wonder about if it's going to take a couple of games to get everybody conditioned to where they want them to be because of the pace of play. I'm just not sure that's something that you can replicate in practice.
True.
And I was talking to the Defenders coach, Pep Hamilton, this week, and he was saying that he likes to play a really physical brand of football. I think both of them have really big teams. That's something that they did to try to, I think, make sure that they can hang in these fast-paced games. But I think it'll just be interesting to see if there's any complications with some of the new rules, with some of the faster pace of play. I think there will be some growing pains, but it should be exciting.
I think you hit on what it'll be. These first few weeks will be an adjustment for a lot of these players who have played with a certain set of rules their whole life. And here you're talking about, you know, forward passes behind the line of scrimmage, multiple forward passes, and all these things that are going to be new to them as well. Some of these guys have played in the NFL. Some of these guys have been in NFL practice squad situations. So you're accustomed to the way things are taught and played at that level. So I think even though they're practicing and all of this, I think it's when it's game time, yeah, we might be looking at the fifth game of the season or sixth game of the season before they feel like, okay, this is second nature. Now we can truly take advantage of these rules and figure out how to use the double forward pass and all this stuff to see how we can use it to our advantage if we're going to go for three every time or how are we going to manipulate our strategies. I think everybody's going to be learning together. I think we're all in the same boat, the people watching and the guys on the field.
Another one I like here is, and this is it increasingly drives me nuts the older I get, is the ball spotting. They have a dedicated ball spotting official because I just see all the time, and we learned this year, I mean, how many games were decided by inches, at least two that I can think of, one because of a field goal, that went just a little bit over the upright, and the other, of course, the one for the NFC West Championship. You know, and so when they spot the ball and they just walk over and just set it down arbitrarily, there's lots of times where I'll look and it'd be like 8, 10 inches, a foot. I mean, man.
Well, it seems so arbitrary. You just see the guy kind of running out and put the foot down, and where they place the ball, I mean, one inch this way, 1 inch that way,
right,
is the difference.
Yeah, so, I mean, hopefully that will make a little bit, you know, better quality. But, I was talking to Zorn about it a few weeks ago, you know, when they first started, and he goes, well, you know, all these guys came flying in here and they, you know, first workout probably had, you know, 10, 12, 15 guys in the, you know, in the training room with, you know, hamstrings and stuff. So they were, you know, they've been working hard. That was a long time ago. And when him and I talked, I think it was around the middle of the season. They've been working out. Well, I wanted to ask you over at Memorial, do they have new turf in there?
You know,
or is it that same old? Because the last time I was there,
they must have new turf by now.
They have to. But I used to coach high school football, and we got a chance to play down there a couple of times because Garfield, I think, was playing their home. I love that stadium. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool. But I know that the facilities were kind of run down and everything. But it's kind of like minor league baseball, you know. It's like, you're riding on the bus and you're eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You get to the big league and there's a spread in the clubhouse and the whole thing. And, you know, these guys, it's a great opportunity for them to get back in the NFL.
Who wins?
Of course, the Dragons.
Okay.
The Defenders are favored by 7.5, according to Las Vegas.
Of course, Jim's got the
odds. Only I would know that.
Shut up, Jim.
Somebody pulled that number out of their tailpipe.
No, I didn't. I saw an actual line on the game.
No, I'm saying the guy who set the line.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
By the way, somebody's saying, suggesting music and said, also do close-up video shots of Mora. She's much better looking than you guys.
Yeah, can we make it so every time I talk, the camera goes to Mora?
That'll be weird.
That'd be great.
You have to, I don't know. Yeah, I'll have to move my mouth to make it look like it's.
Yeah, it'd be like you're working a puppet. That'll be a good look. All right, coming up, we'll talk some more football with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.